Hello and welcome to a holiday edition of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I'm Kevin Fishbane, wishing all of you a Merry Christmas, of course. Joined by Arthur Arkish, got our producers Dan Mott and John Solly here. Heading into Week 16, two games left in the Bears season. We will recap probably the worst Bears game of the season. Bears lost to the Vikings on Sunday. We will turn the page, talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Lovie Smith's Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and interview with Robert Mays of the MMQB, talking Bears and other fun stuff. And we'll talk some Christmas at the end of the show, getting in the holiday spirit. And by the way, we're not going to stop when the season ends. We won't be once a week, but we'll still be here for you on the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Of course, be sure to follow all of our work at ChicagoFootball.com. On Twitter, at Bears_Insider. I'm at K Fishbane. He is at Arthur Arkish. And Arthur, let's talk some Bears-Vikings. So what we learned is the Bears cannot cover anyone in the middle of the field.
Yeah, I don't know if we learned that on Sunday or if we've learned that several weeks ago, but it certainly was a continuation of that. I'll tell you, if we had gone into Sunday and I had predicted that there would be some tackling issues with the Vikings running back in the middle of the field and elsewhere, it wouldn't have been a big surprise. It would have been the part where I told you it was Jerick McKinnon and not Adrian Peterson that the Bears had really no answers for.
Yeah, and, you know, it was bad plays by the defense. It was, you know, Tracy Porter passing Stephon Diggs off to Alan Ball, who wasn't ready for it on that touchdown. It was Jonathan Anderson and Shea McClellan trying to get on the same page as the ball's snapped, and Jerick McKinnon goes off for a 25-yard gain. Bridgewater had a great game, but even Pernell McPhee said it afterwards. The defense kind of made it easy for him because the players were wide open in the flats or over the middle of the field. They couldn't tackle anybody, and that makes that's going to bring up your quarterback accuracy. And he had the best passer rating ever in a game against the Bears when you've thrown the ball at least 20 times. I mean, when I looked at the stats afterwards, Arthur, and then went back and watched the game again, it was almost like watching Mel Tucker's defense, which is as harsh a thing I think you can say about a Vic Fangio defense, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's a scary thought for sure as we are approaching week 16 to be falling back on the previous 2 years of misery. But I can't disagree. It wasn't just a talent issue Sunday. Like you said, there were breakdowns. There were all kinds of tackling problems. There were things going on that you certainly don't want to see at this point of the year. And Bridgewater was good. I had a feeling that he was going to be better. I didn't think the Bears had really seen anything close to his best in the first three games. But did he throw a ball further than, 13, 14 yards in the air for that massive day he had? Not that I can recall.
He had one.
Not a completion.
One. It was the long pass to Mike Wallace over the middle was the only one.
What was that? Still less than
it was,
20,
well,
right?
I mean, it ended up being a 34-yard game, but there was some of the, yeah, you're right. Some of that was yak. And that was, again, I mean, those play action, Shea McClellan hesitated, and then, you know, whatever defense you're in, I don't think you want McClellan trailing Mike Wallace down the middle of the field with no safety help, and that's just how the Bears were. And something I talked about with Robert Mays later in the show is that a lot of these mistakes are with guys that you don't expect to be key players when this team is where they hope to be in a year or two, and that's in playoff contention. So it's hard to be frustrated long-term if you're a Bears fan. But one guy I want to talk about with you that might be part of this future is Alshon Jeffrey. And another injury for him. He was as upset as I've seen him after a game. He's always very quiet, but he was salty with how things went. Only, you know, maybe he's frustrated he got hurt again. Maybe he's frustrated he only had one catch on five targets and he only played 30 snaps. They did a good job doubling him and kind of exposing the Bears don't have other weapons to really attack a defense. But Arthur, I know you talked about him in your weekly fourth and goal column, your little stock report. He's continuing to make this upcoming decision for Ryan Pace very difficult.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think the way I put it is it's really been a boom or bust contract year for him, and it was a boom or bust game in Minnesota. He had the gorgeous touchdown on the back shoulder that really has become uncoverable when it's executed properly. But otherwise, he's really creating more questions than he has answers with his inability to stay on the field. And it might be kind of cliche in NFL circles, but there's a sign inside the Bears' inside the facility that says something along the lines of availability comes first. I'm butchering it now, but it's about availability even over ability, and that's kind of the whole point. Jeffrey has been available for less than half the season now. He's been dominant when he's out there. But is that the kind of guy you're going to rush to pay number one money to? I'm not sure. I think they're going to need to use the franchise tag and get a longer look and see what he can do in a 16-game season or something close to it.
And we'll get into detail on this much more when we have podcasts in February and March and talk about free agency. But, you know, on the one hand, you can think to yourself, well, this might save the Bears some money. They don't have to give Alshon Jeffrey that massive contract. But there's always a team out there. You know, look at how much money Jacksonville gave to Julius Thomas last offseason. Look how much money a lot of these teams around the league have thrown at players, even with injury histories. Somebody is going to have a better offer, financially speaking, I assume, for Alshon Jeffrey, even if he's had all these injury issues this year. And you know, it's just something that they're going to have to monitor, because wide receiver suddenly is kind of a big need going forward. Let's I want to quickly wrap up Vikings game for you guys, so we'll do that with our weekly three and out.
One, two, three. I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
1, 2, 5.
Lisa, three.
All right, one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered, and I can think of three players that you can really say had a good game. So whoever Arthur takes, I'll take one of the other two. So Arthur, who is your positive?
I was going to say, I hope I'm getting one of them right. Deontay Thompson,
yep,
I would imagine, has to be one of the three. He had obviously the explosive return to start the game. He now has three returns. He has two returns longer than 40 yards. He has another one for 38. Mariani didn't have one longer than 37, I think, in the first 10-ish games or whatever it was. So not enough playmakers on this team, but he has proven to be one, and maybe keeping him around shortens your list of needs in the offseason by one.
He has the best kickoff return average in the league right now for anybody with at least 10 kickoff returns. So that's been pretty impressive. The other guy I was going to say is John Timu. I know you wrote about him in your stock up part. You got to give the guy credit. It is his first NFL game on defense, and he has 9 tackles. He had a tackle for loss. He seemed active and showed good instincts. And Adrian Peterson didn't have a very good day, and I think Timu was part of that. And in a position where the Bears are desperately trying to find answers, I thought that he had a really nice game. The third guy I was going to mention, Arthur, would be Robbie Gould. Kind of getting that 51-yard field goal, and kickoffs were fine, and extra points obviously were good. So outside that, not many positives. So we have a laundry list of negatives we can go with. What are you going to go with for your one negative?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend it's a surprise. We've seen it a pop up several times at this juncture, but John Fox's clock management was absolutely maddening at the end of the first half. It's a 10-7 game at the time. He has all three timeouts, and the Vikings are marching. They get into the red zone. He's still not using his timeouts. The Vikings end up scoring, and it leaves the Bears just 22 seconds to do absolutely nothing. I don't think it inspires a lot of confidence in your club when you're not willing to, in a lost season, what are they playing for? Why not try and give your offense another chance to get out there on the field, knowing that they're not supposed to get the ball to begin the second half?
And of course, we will never get a real direct answer on why he chooses that philosophy. And he can even just say, like, I didn't want, you know, I was trying to run the clock down on that. I don't know, but we wouldn't get an answer on it. So nobody even asked about it on Monday. In terms of negatives, I have to go with the offensive line, because they continue to lead the league in holding penalties. Kyle Long, another tough game for him on the edge, obviously, with strip sack. And he said after the game it was the same move that was done on him. I believe he said the Washington game and the Arizona game. And we get in depth about Kyle Long with Robert Mays later in the show. Hieronymus Grassou, another tough game for him. Charles Leno had a holding penalty that was declined. I think Matt Slauson had a false start. And Jay Cutler, what was interesting was this was the first game that Cutler really wasn't able to escape the pocket and make plays. And I think that gives a lot of credit to the Vikings secondary. They didn't let anybody get loose when Cutler scrambled. But the front seven kept him in the pocket and kept him from making big plays. And I think the offensive line's got to do better than that. Let's go ahead. One moment that mattered there, Arthur.
Yeah, the one I was thinking was the Kyle Long strip sack allowed right after the Bears got their first onside kick of the Robbie Gould tenure, or with Robbie Gould attempting the onside kick. But to go in a different direction, how about after the second consecutive week, the defense has allowed a 90-plus yard drive, a touchdown drive, to open the game. The Bears come back out, and they go three and out. They take less than a minute off the clock, and the defense is clearly gassed. And it just really kind of set the stage for what was going to be an awful day, I felt, by putting them right back out there again. And they would sure enough allow points, getting off the field with just a field goal. But still, I thought the offense needed to pick up a couple first downs and give that defense a chance.
You know, I hate to play the hypothetical game, Arthur, but if Jonas Grassou does not get called for a holding penalty on the first play of the game, the Bears have first and 10 from the 15-yard line.
Yeah, and beautiful run from 14.
It was a great run, and I don't like to fall on the idea of talking about momentum and what it can mean in the swing of things, but that was a clear deflating play because it's happened so much this season, and the Bears could have scored first. I mean, they could have gone up 7-0 in Minnesota and really set the tone, and instead – it just, you know, Cutler gets sacked two plays later. It's like 3rd and 25, and of course, then they punt. And I think that that one sticks out for me. But we're done. No more Vikings talk for 2015. Although I will say this, I got a chance to tour the new stadium site, U.S. Bank Stadium. First of all, it's amazing how much progress they've made in this thing. And Arthur, you saw the pictures and you've read about it. You cover the NFC North for USA Today, so you know all about this stuff. I remember when you and I were at Pro Football Weekly and all this was getting approved and covering it there. This stadium is going to be awesome. And props to the city of Minnesota and the Vikings for getting this done. And it's going to be a really cool thing for, if you're a Bears fan, to go to Minnesota once a year. I would highly recommend making that one of your road trips when that stadium will be ready to go next year. Just a well-run organization. It should be a really cool stadium. And the 2018 Super Bowl will be there.
Yeah, very cool. I'm excited to see the stadium. I'm actually a big fan of the Twin Cities. I feel kind of an underrated metropolitan area they have there. And obviously, like you said, they got the carrot dangled with the Super Bowl coming now. And it'll be really cool to have a chance to, you know, play indoors, outdoors, whatever, in freezing Minneapolis come either late December or January. I'm excited to see what they got cooking there.
Yeah, our associate producer, John Sally, of course, got strong ties to Minnesota. He and I were discussing all the good food out there. Very walkable city. My problem is I've only been there in the winter. I've been there three times. It's been the winter. It's been cold. But I've still enjoyed it, so I can only imagine how much I would enjoy it in the summer. Okay, no more talking even about the state of Minnesota. We've moved on. Before we get to time of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we'll shift gears and stick with Bears talk. Got a chance to talk with Robert Mays. He writes, covers the NFL for the MMQB, used to work for Grantland, fantastic writer, as you'll hear, also a Chicago native, so he follows the Bears pretty closely. Go ahead, follow him on Twitter, at Robert Mays, and he also has a podcast, the MMQB podcast, with a friend of the program, Robert Klemko. So here's my interview with Robert Mays. All right, now, Robert, our listeners hopefully know this if they, you know, follow you on Twitter, read some of your stories. You do have some Chicago roots. You grew up in Barrington. You know this Bears team well. So we'll obviously talk about the Bears a little bit. Where are you at where with this Bears team is today compared to where they were on Thanksgiving night? And where should fans' panic level be when it comes to long term?
I was always of the mind that on Thanksgiving night, even, that this team was playing with house money in a way. You know, no matter what happened this year in terms of playoffs, anything like that, they weren't an embarrassing thing to watch for an entire NFL season. And I feel like with the where the personnel was coming into the season, that was very much in play. So the fact that they weren't that and they played like a team that kind of knew what they were doing and it seemed like there were actually people in charge, all that kind of stuff, I didn't mind. I always knew that it was kind of a house of cards just in the sense that they were never going to do anything. So just having moments where you could be proud to watch them and happy to be a fan was enough for me.
And I think along those lines, as you've watched this losing streak and some of the deficiencies that you've seen in the personnel, it's not like they're necessarily – these are coming from guys that are – going to be building blocks for the future of this team. I mean, these are positions that are big needs for this team. These are the players that you're seeing kind of struggle a little bit. Are you seeing some of that too? That maybe makes that brings that concern level down because these are guys that probably won't be here next year?
Of course. I mean, I don't even know who the building blocks for this team are. you can probably count them on two hands. I don't think that there's a huge list of guys where you're saying, well, I wish I would have seen more out of him because we really need him moving forward. This is a lot of stopgap. I mean, you got Deontay Thompson and John Timu playing for you, like real reasonable snaps. And, you know, I like John and I've everything else, but that's not who you want to need to be if you want to be a playoff contending team. So I'm in the exact same boat. You know, the problems with the offensive line, they're easy to live with because you need new offensive linemen. That's just where this team is.
Now, speaking of building blocks, you and I, we chatted a little bit in Indianapolis during the combine, and I do remember briefly touching on Kyle Long with you. And when you watch Kyle Long, and I know you love offensive line play, you love watching the O-line guys, and what you've seen of him at right tackle, I want to know your evaluation of how he's progressed and then what you think his future should be in terms of position.
I feel like what he's done this year, it's a really unfair thing to ask any player to do. And I think that it's the fault of the front office that he had to do this. I mean, they didn't really have a better option, so this is what had to happen. I think that he's clearly had his struggles. But moving from guard to tackle it's not something you just do. It takes an acclimation process. It's more than a season, too. It's so much of a difference. And the thing is, they didn't do him any favors because he moved there about 2 weeks before the season started. This is a situation where you're doing those pass sets and everything else where you need thousands of repetitions, so you're not thinking about it anymore. So it's just something that comes naturally to you. So I feel like with that in mind, he's done a decent job. I always thought his future was a guard. I've always thought that. But now you're in a spot where, do you really want to move him back to guard now? Do you want to have it be a situation where he's moving position to position based on the other players you have for the rest of his career? That's unfair, too. So I think just based on his skill set, he's a better guard than a tackle. But I don't know if you've kind of, you know, if the toothpaste is out of the tube now.
And when you look at their tackle position, I mean, I'm not saying Charles Leno is going to be a Pro Bowler, but the guy's done a fine job at left tackle, and they've been pretty open that he's a left tackle, not a right tackle. And I've thought that, you know, and we might have talked about this, that Kyle Long could have been a 10-time Pro Bowl guard. I mean, the guy has that much skill that he could do that. And then there's all the talk about, well, he can make more money at tackle. And, you know, he's not going to necessarily talk about which one he will play more, at least on the record. But were you of that belief that, like, he could have just been just this amazing cornerstone at guard, a position people don't talk about very much, but with all the three techniques, it's still important that he could have been maybe even a Hall of Fame guard if he just stayed there throughout his career?
I think that would have been the better move, yes. And I think by moving him to tackle, you get worse in two positions. I don't know if you're worse in the aggregate because your drop-off at right tackle would have been so huge without him playing that spot. But you automatically get worse at guard when you move him, and then you have a guy playing tackle that shouldn't be. So I was never a fan of it. I think that if you read in interviews with him in years prior, he didn't want to do it either, but he's doing what's best for the team, and I think he's done an admirable job.
So, Robert, you co-host a podcast, the MMQB podcast, with Robert Klenko, Andy Manoid. Great listen. You guys should go download it after you listen to my podcast, of course. And I'm sure you listen to your competitors sometimes, and I listen to our competitors. Now, we compete with Serial and the Bill Simmons podcast here at Chicago Football. So I was tuning into to Bill Simmons, of course, your former boss over there at Grantland, and he called you out 2 weeks in a row. You said you got into conversation with him about Robbie Gould versus Steven Gostkowski, and you were, you know, holding the pride for Chicago Bears place kicker Robbie Gould. Do you have an apology for Bears fans?
I do not at all, because I want to set the record straight on this. I was besmirched in public by a man with a very large following, and I don't appreciate it. I count Bill among my friends, but this is a point of contention with us. I said in this conversation, the way that it started was, he said, I don't think a lot of people know what it's like to walk into a season or a game knowing that your kicker is going to make every kick. And I said there was definitely a stretch in my life where I felt that way with Robbie Gould. He was one of the most accurate kickers in the history of the league, and he kicked in one of the toughest buildings in football to kick in. I never thought he had the range that Steven Gostkowski had. I never thought that he was as good a kicker as Steven Gostkowski is. I didn't say he was as good today. All I said was, I know what that felt like for a while, and that's all I'm saying about that. I did not. I felt like what my position on this was totally misconstrued, and even though I probably take some of the blame for the Robbie Gould fall off, I don't think I deserve all of it.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad that we have the platform for you to explain yourself, of course.
Thank you.
Because, thank you. As you and I talked about earlier this week, you wrote a great profile about Andy Dalton that everyone should read at the MMQB, and you clearly didn't tell Andy Dalton in your conversation with him, don't try to tackle somebody that just picked you off and hurt your thumb, because he did. And, you know, you might have some Bengals fans coming after you for that one.
Well, the problem is I should know what the pain of that is like, because all I'm thinking about when that play happened was Cutler doing it against the Chargers a couple years ago when the Bears were about to go on that run. And there's just, let them score. Those 6 points aren't as valuable as the rest of your season.
Speaking of that season, we got Lovie Smith week here. Lovie Smith week part deux, which is significantly less exciting because it's the second time around and both teams are bad. And it was way more fun last year with Josh McCown being our conference call guy and you know, leading into the McCown versus Cutler matchup. Now it's just Jay Cutler versus Chris Conte, which leads me to this important question. What's your favorite moment of the Chris Conte era in Chicago?
I feel like it has to be that last, that Green Bay game, the Randall Cobb touchdown. I don't think there's even, like, another option. And some of my favorite moments are a couple of those diving interceptions where they happen and it's just the most maddening play you can think of. And I'm just wondering, like, what, if there's any order to the universe and why any of us are doing anything. It was a rough ride, I will say that. And the fact that all those guys are playing for that Tampa defense and they're somehow still better than the Bears defense is just absolutely mind-blowing. I don't know what to think about it.
I went back to I was working on something with a colleague and went back to the 2011 Bears because we were kind of looking at, are you better now than you were 4 years ago? And when you look at that roster and you're like, oh my God, these guys on offense are so terrible. But look at that defense. And it's a little different this year because the offense has struggled with all the injuries. But you do see this now kind of long form way of how things have changed and flipped with this Bears roster. And facing Lovie is just a reminder about how good the defense was and how terrible it's been now. I mean, look, they've had some pretty good games this year, as we talked about. But as a whole, you look at the talent levels, a lot different than Briggs, Tillman, Urlacher, and Peppers.
Even that 2012 defense, I mean, right. That defense was the best defense in the league. And that was one of the more fun seasons I've had as a Bears fan because they were so good. And how precipitous the drop-off was really was incredible. I mean, I can't... It's literally unbelievable to think you go from having the best defense in the league in 2012 to arguably last year having the worst defense in the league. And that happens because you have a lot of aging guys and that kind of stuff. But it's still to watch it, and as a fan, to really think about where you're putting your effort and where you're putting your hope, it had done a complete 180. I don't think I can imagine a scenario where it could have happened more quickly.
And with this Lovie Smith team, I was, you know, we've kind of been breaking down the matchup here on the show a little bit, and I admit I haven't watched a ton of Buccaneers football this season. They tend to play at the same time as the Bears. I've tried to watch Jameis Winston a little bit out of curiosity. From your vantage point, what's impressed you about what they've been able to do this season?
I think that their problems are the problems they've had for a long time. They have very little edge pass rushing talent, which really limits what you can do as a Lovie Smith defense. He doesn't like the blitz. So they struggle in that regard because their secondary isn't very talented. The middle of their defense is very good. Gerald McCoy is still a superstar. Quan Alexander has been a nice surprise. Levante David's really coming into form. So that's not surprising on that end. On offense, it's incredible the steps forward you can take when you have a real quarterback, even if he's a rookie that struggles at times, compared to the play they've had the last 3 or 4 years. Jameis has been one of the best rookie quarterbacks of all time. He's been a fantastic addition to that offense. And it's really allowed Mike Evans to be the player he is. Martin's resurgence has been super impressive, not something anybody saw coming. The young linemen they have are solid. I feel like that team had a chance to be one of the worst offenses in football this year, and they're not anything close to that. And if you're a fan of that team, you have to have a ton of hope going forward. You really do.
What will it be like on Sunday if Chris Conte makes a diving interception of a Jay Cutler pass?
I'm pretty sure I'll just explode. Like, for whatever reason, I don't think the laws of the universe would allow me to remain intact if that were to go down. There's just something contradictory about it that would break too many laws of physics.
And then Cutler would, you know, hurt his thumb trying to tackle Conte, of course.
Exactly. And that injury would go into next season, and we would have to play the David Fales, you know, spinning wheel of death for however long.
Hey, I know you're a jet setter, but around Chicago, there are already people that are clamoring to see, well, let's see what we have in David Fales in the final two games, which is...
That's insane. Yeah. That's abject insanity. Jay Cutler has been better this year than any other season he played in Chicago, and I don't even think it's particularly close.
Oh, no,
just
I agree.
Deontay Thompson and Josh Bellamy and whoever. I mean, Patrick Omane seems like a kind person, but he got cut by the Bucks, and they had the worst offensive line of football last year. Like, let's not pretend like Jay Cutler has been given any sort of help for any part of this year, and he's been the best version of himself that he's been in Chicago since he got here.
Yeah, he's been pretty good. And he's also been very good with the media. I know fans don't care at all when we talk about which guys are good and which guys are bad with the media. But when the head coach doesn't tell us anything, it's kind of nice that the quarterback opens up a little bit. A few more here with Robert Mays of the MMQB. Of course, follow him on Twitter, at Robert Mays. I think I have to ask you, because we've talked about a little bit earlier on this podcast, about this whole Odell Beckham, Josh Norman thing. That's just, it's one of those things where I feel like when it happened in a vacuum, okay, this was not a good thing, not a good look for either, really, especially Beckham. But now it's just because it's the NFL and they bungle everything and the whole bat thing comes to life, it's just turned insane. And depending on when people listen to this, the appeal might be heard, might be decided upon. So I guess I have to ask you, what was your take on the whole situation and how it's been handled since?
I mean, I think how it's been handled since has just devolved into absurdity. I mean, it's almost like a parody of itself now. The fact that now the NFL passed the rule today that you can't bring foreign objects onto the sideline. The things they care about are things no one cares about. Odell Beckham 100% should have been suspended. That what he did was very wrong. It's as dirty or dirtier, in my opinion, than anything Ndamukong Suh ever did. And that's fine. He should be suspended. And we should just leave it at that and walk away. It was an interesting thing to watch in the moment. It really speaks to how dominant Josh Norman has been, and that's fine. And we're done with it, and now we can just play Week 16. I just don't understand. I don't understand so little of what goes on in the decisions that they make. It's like a drunk guy throwing at darts in terms of how they make their discipline decisions. It's incredible.
And this league's amazing, too, because I'm sitting there on Monday night, and I can't turn off Lions Saints because I'm in a fantasy football semifinal against Breeze and Brandon Cooks. And it just reminds you of this product that they have, that you can have two terrible teams playing each other. And my Twitter was blowing up at the end of that game. I saw people lose their fantasy matchup because of Stafford's kneel down. People wanted Hightower to lateral on the final play. And I was one of these people watching the game. I actually cared. I mean, look, I don't want to really necessarily credit Roger Goodell for this, but the way that the NFL works, and I'm trying to connect this to whatever we're calling this whole Norman Odell Beckham thing, because it just takes over our minds with the way the media is, and people want to talk about it, and it's just out there for everyone, and we keep watching it.
I did not watch last night, and there have been few moments in my life where I've been prouder of myself than I was last night.
I'm so jealous of you.
Really, you should be. I felt like I reached a higher plane of existence. Granted, I was like watching TV on Netflix and then went to bed at 9:30, but I still think that's a higher plane than having to watch that entire game.
Yeah, I think you're – well, here's the thing, Robert, and you could maybe relate to this. My other option was watching the Bulls game.
Oh, yeah. That's not fun either. I was watching that a little bit on my computer in my hotel room, and I was almost as disappointed in myself for watching that as I would have been for watching the Monday night game.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you the exact exchange I had with my roommate. I was like, I can't watch this anymore. My fantasy football is making me too stressed. I don't like that I'm caring about this. Change the channel. So he goes to the TV guide, and he goes, I don't want to watch the Bulls anymore because we watched all four overtimes last week and it was miserable. And then you're stuck. There's nothing left on TV. And here's something for you, because Robert Mays is a big Bulls fan. Somebody brought this up. Is Fred Hoiberg the Bulls version of Mark Trestman? I think that's pretty harsh, but the way things have turned out the last week, Bulls fans are starting to panic.
It doesn't look good. I mean, it really doesn't look good. I think it's more of a condensed version of the Mark Trestman experience, in the sense that he was supposed to come in to be this offensive revolutionary. And for Trestman, it lasted an entire season. For Hoiberg, it lasted until we saw the team play. So it's almost worse, because the product never got to be on the floor when we thought it was going to be decent.
Yeah, it's well, Chicago fans can just, well, they have the Cubs, so they'll, I think they can, they could, the Blackhawks can hold them over for a couple months until spring training starts.
I can't believe that's where we are.
Yeah.
That we're just clamoring for spring training. I don't know what universe this is and how I woke up here, but I don't think I'm comfortable with it.
That's it's Chicago sports these days. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Enjoy Arizona. Robert Mays of the MMQB joined us today on the podcast. And actually, quick fun fact, I learned this a couple months ago via Twitter. Robert and I were at the same high school basketball game as fans in, was it 2001 or 02? The Barrington Highland Park game, in which we both remember the end of that game differently because I don't think that shot was anywhere close to being good before the buzzer, but you view it differently.
It was Mr. Mike Clear from the right corner, and it 100% went in. You are wrong about this, and I will take that with me to my grave.
That's fine. That's fine. All that matters is the Giants went downstate, and that's all I really remember from it. But you know, we could agree to disagree on that one. Robert, thanks so much for joining us today. Enjoy the holidays. Happy New Year, and we will keep up with your stuff at the MMQB.
Same to you, Ken. I appreciate it.
All right, big thanks again to Robert Mays and for putting up with me bringing up the time my high school beat his in a super sectional game because that's really what people tune into this podcast for. Good insights into the Bears, and I thought his take on Kyle Long, Arthur, was interesting because he's of the belief that Kyle Long should be a guard. And as I said, I don't want to say that I don't think Kyle, I'm sure Kyle Long has it in him to be a great tackle in this league with enough seasoning, but we've seen it at guard. I mean, he could be one of the best guards in the game if he just stayed there. What was your take on the way Robert thought about that situation?
Yeah, it was interesting for sure. I would respectfully disagree. I think someone with Kyle Long's, you know, just immense talent in really every facet, he can thrive wherever he goes. But I strongly disagreed with the Bears' decision to handle it the way they did, obviously waiting until, you know, the eve of the opener, 48 hours, whatever it was. There wasn't nearly enough time to prepare for that. It should have been done in a full offseason. But it's interesting. I can see the kind of tenacious side of Kyle maybe thriving inside as a mauler, as a run blocker, but I just think someone with that length, with that athleticism, he should be able to handle himself just as well on the edge, and I believe he eventually will.
We do expect to talk to Ryan Pace after the season ends, so I'm sure that'll be one of the questions, and I imagine it's something the front office regrets handling it that way. John Fox never really said that. I mean, I think he's admitted that hindsight 2020, and it wasn't an ideal situation, but that's one of those things you kind of want to get the general manager's opinion because, you wonder if they knew they were going to have to move Kyle on a tackle, when would they have done it? And, you know, how would they have done it differently if maybe they knew it in April? I don't know how they could have done it differently. It's a weird hypothetical to think of because I said it's right. Happened, it's over. But I got to imagine it's one of Ryan Pace's biggest regrets.
Yeah, I would think so too. And it was, you know, it was sort of the subsequent move after not addressing the position in the offseason. So, but there's a lot of time in between the draft ending in May and then obviously the season beginning in September. So, you know, he got some looks in training camp, but it doesn't make a ton of sense.
And I do want to make it clear also, I'm not saying it's a regret because Kyle Long's been bad at right tackle. He's had a couple bad plays, including ones in back-to-back weeks that have been magnified. You've pointed this out, Arthur. We've talked about this, how well he played in some big games against very good pass rushers this season. I think that just regardless of how he played, Kyle Long could go to the Pro Bowl this year, and it would still have been a huge mistake by Ryan Pace and John Fox and Adam Gase by not doing this sooner. I think that's the key, that you just can't throw someone like that, your best offensive lineman, into a situation like that.
Yep, I agree completely. And I guess the only thing that's troubling about Kyle, and I am, again, very confident that he'll get this corrected, but it is a little concerning to see these struggles happening late in the season when you'd think, you know, if he's healthy, I know not everyone's not 100% healthy, but you'd think he would be getting better with more time at the position rather than seemingly taking steps in the wrong direction, which unfortunately he's appeared to be doing the past couple weeks.
Let's talk Buccaneers. Let's talk Lovie. Talk Jameis,
let's do it.
Conte, Major Wright, Henry Melton. just a fun reunion. As I said to Robert, though, I wish Josh McCown was there. You've probably watched more Buccaneers than I have, Arthur. What surprised you about where this team's at this point?
Well, I mean, it starts with Jameis Winston. He's everyone, you know, he was considered pro ready, but I don't think he was expected to put up the kind of numbers he has. And what's impressed me most has been just what they've put on his plate. I mean, he's calling a lot of action from the line of scrimmage. He definitely has flexibility to check in and out of plays. Dirk Koetter has really, I mean, they've played to their strengths. Mike Evans is a deep threat, and they've been using him that way. They have been pushing the ball down the field. Now, some of that is because the defense is so bad, and they've been playing catch-up. But I don't think this is a stripped-down rookie weekly game plan we're seeing with Winston. He is he's handled a lot. He's handled it really well, and he's protected the football really well too, which is always, you know, paramount for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, and as you talked about, I mean, the run game has been really good, and the Bears haven't stopped the run very well. They haven't done it consistently this season. They've had some really good games against the run, but haven't done it well enough. And we're not going to break down this whole matchup for you because, you know, we know you listeners at this point, you're not really curious about how, you know, Gerald McCoy and Matt Slauson line up against each other. Arthur and I are curious to see how that goes down, but we don't have to go in depth.
And Pat Omame, the former Buccaneer, of course.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about revenge game for Patrick Omame. That dude is going to be fired up to take down the Fighting Loveys, the team that cut him. Feature story, Sunday story, your Northwest Herald, Patrick Omame, Christmas weekend facing his former team.
By Kevin Fishbane. Look for it.
I'm all over it. I am curious to see how Conte plays. I mean, I'm happy for him that he's had a good season. I always liked talking to him. I thought the criticism to him was very unfair for the most part. But, you know, here's the thing I always say or have thought about with Chris Conte this year, Arthur. Chris Brzezinski has made a couple bad plays that we've noticed, okay? Mm-hmm. And Amos obviously had the one missed tackle. Antrell Roll had that one big misplay against Charles Johnson. Now, Vic Fangio plays his safeties. They're not as important, or maybe important is the wrong word. They're not as a part of the plays as much as they were in Lovie Smith's defense or Mel Tucker's defense. But think about how many times we noticed Chris Conte and Major Wright in the past couple of years compared to how much we've noticed the Bears' safeties making bad plays this year.
Yeah, it's been night and day for sure. And like you said, part of that is by design. Fangio is really looking to limit those big plays. But, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, there were free runners heading up to the second and third level that made Conte look bad at times last year, too. But, yeah, it's one area, I think, of improvement that the Bears should be able to hang their hat on and feel good about with regard to Adrian Amos. One thing I'd say about Chris Conte, I know he got a little banged up last Thursday night.
Correct.
So I guess before anything else, we'll have to, you know, check on his availability. But he has made some plays. I will say he stood out for some good, more good than bad, I think, in his first season in Tampa.
Ah, man, Lovie Smith. I wish there was like more kind of juice for this game. I mean, obviously no Briggs, no Tillman. I'm not sure he's that, you know, fired up to go against Cutler and Forte and Robbie Gould and Sherrick McManus and Shea McClellan. I just named all of the Bears that are left from Lovie Smith's teams. Alshon Jeffrey from 3 years ago. It just shows the amazing roster turnover. And Robert and I talked about how the franchise has shifted since Lovie was here. And good for Lovie Smith for getting Tampa Bay at least competitive for the, you know, much of the first, what, three quarters of the season before the last couple of games. And, you know, we'll see how things go. We'll get to our picks at the end of the show. So let's not jump ahead. Let's completely change gears here, Arthur, because that's what we do. We are gear changers, and we can adapt on the run. Let's talk about Christmas. You might be listening to this on Christmas, maybe in front of the fire. Got with your family, just turn on the ChicagoFootball.com podcast.
But hopefully not. Wait, no, did I say
that? Hopefully not. You got your eggnog.
Just kidding. Maybe on Christmas Eve. Hopefully Christmas is spent with the family, not with your headphones on.
No, you do it with the family around you. You know, just put it on in the stereo in the living room. And so I was talking to our producers here, Dan Mott and John Solly, about some Christmas movies, favorite Christmas movies. Which one he wants to jump in here first?
Solid. I mean, we're all going with Die Hard, number one, right?
I mean, that's mine.
I mean, I know that's mine. I think that's Dan's. Arthur, are you going to make it 4-for-4 as Die Hard as your number
Absolutely.
One?
Absolutely. Yeah. Clean sweep.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to ChicagoFootball.com podcast. That's our Christmas.
It was tough to think about that one. There's too many good ones out there. I think if I have to choose a top, it would probably be A Christmas Story.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Everybody, you know, loves the marathon that TBS does. Mm-hmm. I think it's still TBS. I'm not sure, but you can't go wrong with a Christmas story or Bad Santa. I don't know.
Yes, it's a wooden pickle.
I'm still very partial to Elf. I thought that was a very clever movie. Will Ferrell. It took me about a long time of watching the show New Girl to realize Zooey Deschanel was in Elf. I was very confused by the hair color change there. But that I think Elf's a fantastic movie. Also, since my name is Kevin and I'm from the North Shore of Chicago, Home Alone, I mean, that's just... I actually read an oral history about the making of Home Alone, how that all came together last week. It's the 25th anniversary, I believe. That's always a classic.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
I'd throw in both Scrooged and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, two more great ones. And then, of course, the classic, It's a Wonderful Life. I know we're getting away from the comedies now, but it's something I've watched every year on Christmas Eve for about 30 years. So that will always hold a place in my heart.
That one, yeah, my family, that's been a tradition for us. We'll watch It's a Wonderful Life. That's a really good one. You know what's not that good of a movie, but I always liked the book Polar Express.
That movie stinks.
The movie was not... I remember I walked out of the theater liking it because it was just brought back such nostalgia from the book. But then I remember watching it later on like ABC Family thinking, this movie was not very good.
It's kind of lame.
Yeah. Tom Hanks playing like 17 different characters in that movie. But that was maybe... but if we're going to go with that, how about Jingle All the Way? And obscured bad Christmas movies. Arnold Schwarzenegger. A dynamic duo if I've ever seen one.
How about The Nightmare Before Christmas? That's offbeat.
Very offbeat.
Incredibly offbeat, but I always loved that one.
Have any of you guys seen The Night Before yet? It's in theaters now. Seth Rogen is in it.
Oh, no, I have
Joseph
not.
Gordon.
Oh,
no. So good. Really so good. If you guys get a chance, go see it. It's hilarious.
You guys have.
Does it reach like Bad Santa levels of crude? That's what I want to know.
It's more of a drug trip, if I could explain it, you know, correctly. I mean, I've had a few people ask me that, and I was like, well. I guess you're just kind of following along. These guys are one of them is on a huge drug trip, and it's hilarious. So I recommend going to see it.
One guy on a huge drug trip sounds like a bad Phil Emery press conference.
Oh, John Sully, heyo. You guys have any favorite family Christmas traditions? Anybody does here? They'd like to share with the group. I'll give a brief one. When I was 16, 17, it was just like, I think it was like December 22nd. I was with three good friends, and we were bored. So we decided to bake cookies. And then we baked like 200 cookies, and we were going to eat them all. So we were just like, had nothing to do that night. So we put them in little Ziploc bags, put in a little note, and spent the whole night driving around the suburbs and dropping them off in mailboxes. We did that for like 7 years, I think. All the way through college, and I still to this day, like around December 26th, 27th, I'll get a text, you know, asking for their cookies, and that was a nice little tradition, nice to give back.
That's cool.
Maybe I'll bring you guys some cookies.
So, what cookies do you make then?
Just sugar cookies. Then we frost them. We had one of our closest friend who did not partake in this. We'd always use the really giant bear cookie cutter and give him the biggest cookie, but it always cracked in half. So he ended up getting like half a broken bear. So that was always a fun little Christmas tradition. The Bears have a nice Christmas tradition this week. They're going to have practice on Friday.
Oh, Merry
luckily
Christmas.
For Arthur and me, we don't have to be there. Media won't be there, so. We don't have to be working this Christmas after working on Thanksgiving.
Didn't Bill O'Brien from the Texans say Christmas is a distraction? I think I saw that quote this week.
That sounds like something Bill O'Brien would say. Well,
Christmas is a distraction, but not changing quarterbacks multiple times early in the season and promising no early hook and then going with the early hook for his club. But hey, they're playoff bound, so who am I to say that?
Yeah, that's true. Good for the Texans. We will next week on the podcast. It'll be our wrapping up the 2015 year. We'll go through the top Bears stories of the year, maybe some of the top plays, so everyone can start thinking about some of those. I always like the year end stuff. I'm a sap for the year end nostalgia. ESPN's Images of the Year they do every year. Big fan of those. Not sure you're going to want a 2015 Bears montage, though. So we will save you from
montage.
That.
Short montage.
Yeah, short montage.
We'll just the Green Bay game.
Yeah, we'll just play the Thanksgiving game pretty much on repeat for you for that one. I was going to even open this up to TV Christmas specials, but I keep thinking of the Full House Christmas special where they get locked into a toy store. But now I'm really digressing down a path that we don't want to necessarily go down.
I have a new tradition people can start this Christmas. The Saturday after Christmas, 10:30 a.m., WCIU, sit down. You have all your gifts will be open at that point, and you can enjoy the day after Christmas and enjoy Chicago football now, WCIU.
And I interviewed Mark Mariani, friend of the program. He was our second player interview on this podcast, and we talked Christmas, and so make sure to watch that. Dan Mott does an awesome job, obviously, putting those together. We talked some Nintendo 64, so be sure to tune in. Okay, let's wrap it up. Arthur... I guess who is your player to watch on Sunday in the Bears Buccaneers game? We're going to be watching it. I'm going to be there covering it, so I hope everybody listening is going to at least watch.
Yeah, I'll be watching. I hope to not be watching Tracy Porter struggling. I think that the bloom has come off that rose just a little bit in recent weeks, and Mike Evans is no joke, and he will get behind Porter if Tracy lets him. So curious to see how he rebounds, because that really is the Buccaneers' passing game, is Winston to Mike Evans.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know if I have anybody I want to watch.
Shay.
Shay's in the concussion protocol. He might not play.
That's where we... Oh, wait, no, I'm not going there. I stopped myself.
Tough for...
What about Willie Young?
Willie Young's played really well. Yeah, he has played very well. Here's the problem for the Bears. Willie Young's played so well that now they don't have to worry about maybe like having to trade him, but they might have to pay him more money because he's probably going to want more money. After this season, I'll give you a player to watch. Let's see if Adrian Amos can make a big play. Let's see, or Chris Brzezinski. Let's see if one of those safeties can make a big play, turn over the ball, and Jameis Winston, you know, pop Doug Martin or something coming to the hole. Let's see if a safety can make a play going against, of course, legendary Bears safety Chris Conte on the other side. All right, boys, time to make our picks. Let's go around the room. Executive producer Dan Mott, who you got?
Last week, my streak ended. I picked the Bears to win, and I sat at home and thought, why did I do that? This week, I got Bucks 35, Bears 17. I think the Bucks are going to steamroll the Bears, and the Bears are going to continue to lose games that they shouldn't lose and fashions that they shouldn't lose them in.
What our listeners can't see is Dan's wearing a T-shirt that says Lovey number one. Big Lovey Smith fan over there. All right, John Solly, your pick.
I'm going to go with Tampa 27, Bears 14.
Oh, my goodness. No confidence in the Bears after what's happened the last 3 weeks.
It's pretty much
done. You know what's fun to think about? What would have happened if Robbie Gould made that 36-yard field goal? Who knows? Yeah. All right, Arthur, your pick.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to see what the spread is here. Who cares? I've got the Bucks 24, Bears 20. This defense has made quarterbacks that aren't as talented as Jameis Winston and pass catchers not as talented as Mike Evans look really good. So, and you throw Doug Martin into the mix, I think this offense can really give the Bears trouble.
I think the spread's anywhere between 2.5 and 3.5. We'll call it 3. Hub Arkish, Bucks 34. Bears 23. Even though it's a Lovey Smith team, the Bucks offense can be explosive, and the Bears D has shown few signs of life. That is Hub Arkish's pick. By the way, might as well throw out there, friend of the program, Bob Laguerre, 10-3-1 against the spread, picking Bears games this year. So I went on an island last week. I picked the Bears to upset the Vikings, and I can't pick them to win again. After I picked them to win, 3 weeks in a row, and they went 0-3. I don't think the Bucks are very good, and I just confident the Bears are going to have a good game in one of these two games. And however, I think it's more likely to happen against Detroit than in Tampa. They keep it close. I got Tampa Bay 23, Chicago Bears 20, heading back home for Week 17. Then with a 5-10 record, with one chance to. Outdo last year's record. Kind of amazing to think how far we've come from Thanksgiving, but as John Fox would say, that's football. It's a combative game, folks. So that'll do it for our holiday episode of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Episode number 17 as we wrap up this season. I want to thank our executive producer, Dan Mott, associate producer, John Solly. Of course, don't forget, get all the best Bears news analysis at ChicagoFootball.com. Go on iTunes and subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating while you're at it. We want to thank our sponsors, Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers. The Silverado is ready when you are. Get a head start on the new year with special offers and check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. Also, a special thanks to our guest on the show, Robert Mays, to my good friend and my co-host, Arthur Arkish. I'm Kevin Fishbane. From all of us at ChicagoFootball.com, Merry Christmas. We will talk to you next week.